Bass, I hear you calling, but I can't fish for you right now. Me and the boys are trolling, and they'd never let me live it down. Just a few more muskies, and I'll throw a frog for you. I hear my buddies laughing, oh Bass, what can I do? Bass, what can I do?
All right, folks, welcome to the Musky 360 podcast, Jaybird. Bass, I hear you calling.
Exactly. And you know what? But the Bassmaster Classic just got over with, too. Imagine the timing.
Me and the boys are fishing.
You listen to it.
Oh, yeah.
You wrote that one for me, by the way.
You know, I am.
You texted me lyrics and without even the song title, and I went, yes.
Yes. it's you're the Elton John and I'm the Bernie, right?
Oh.
I'm just the secret. Secret lyric writer there. I'm not the performer per se. Jay. Bass, I hear you calling. But anyway.
Heartstrings, baby.
Wait till we do wrapped up like a deuce.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah.
Blinded by the boat lights.
The Springsteen version?
Yeah, wrapped up. No, okay. the Manfred Mann's Earth Band version is what I prefer.
Okay.
I think. Anyway.
Right. That's the recognizable one.
That is Manfred Mann, folks. That is
that is finest.
Wow. Yeah, Jay was just weird, just gabbing about the old Bassmaster Classic.
Yeah.
Some people caught some little fish.
No,
it's crazy. Jay was just regaling me. I talked to Byron Velvick and Eric from Livingston. They were down there. Byron, I think he used to fish on. He was a pro, but we were talking. They were at the Classic, which is just unbelievable amounts of people. I had to begrudgingly be in the booth when it was in Knoxville years back. But Jay, you're saying, yeah, it was once again forward-facing sonar kind of vibe. Yeah.
Looked like all the top guys were doing that. Well, I know all the top guys, or most of them, were doing that because I was watching a little bit of the TV coverage on Sunday. And the kid from Minnesota won, 22 years old, smoking, targeting big fish, and caught him. And quite a story.
That's always
cool.
You know, it's always the thing, though. It's the, if I hear one more thing about live imaging forward facing sonar, I think we're going to see it come to kind of a head here in the next bit.
Yeah, I think they want it banned. There's people that want it banned, let's put it that way, from the Bassmaster Classic thing. I was just watching YouTube before you called, right? So this thing came on about this guy was ice fishing, and he had a YouTube going. He was ice fishing in Wisconsin, and this crazy guy comes up to him and starts chewing him out that his forward-facing sonar, his live imaging, I should say, on his ice fishing rig, was doing something to the fish in his shack electronically, like out of his mind. And he was dropping bombs. And so the guy eventually called the police because he had the whole thing on tape. It was interesting.
It's kind of like the guy that goes to Costco and he doesn't want the bar scan reader on his chickens. Have you seen that guy?
What, that causes cancer or something?
I don't know. He doesn't want the bar. Okay. He's like, I don't want the UV light on my rotisserie my $5 rotisserie chickens. Which is the only reason anyone has a Costco membership. We're more of a BJ's family down here, however.
Okay.
You don't know what BJ's is.
No.
It's like Costco, but for hillbillies. Anyway, goodness gracious. Speaking of Costco for hillbillies, Jay, what's going on at the Muskie Shop? Great segue.
What's going on at the Muskie Shop?
People have been losing their freaking minds. Patrick there from Swivlo, blown away. A lot of people. Jay, you took that sucker out. Finally, Jay got out and made a cast out of anger, but you guys have gotten to play with that thing. in person.
Yeah, we had a big snowstorm yesterday, had a completely snow-covered parking lot. It was nice and windy, just nasty out,
fluffy, moist.
So I took our demo reel and finally got it spooled up and grabbed a shield rod and put about a 2 or 3 ounce bait on that thing without hooks, and took a few customers that were in this morning that come in a lot. And I'm like, dude, you got to check this out. Just here, follow me. And just start flinging it with the hand off the reel and talk about bomb cast.
Yeah.
I was hitting the ditch between our parking lot and Len's. I don't know.
I, for 40 one,
plus yards. I don't know. It was just gone.
I've been in that ditch before.
Yeah, you know the ditch. That's where the PT Cruiser used to park.
I'm well aware of that ditch, boys.
Yeah.
Anyway, now it's cool, Pat. Yeah. The Swedes are into that, so that's cool. Again, just for the sake of my email account, slowing on the blow up here. Planer boards are coming. Calm yourselves. Calm yourselves. You can't for the amount of people that are emailing, you control in open water, but we got people that won't see open water for weeks going, where's the planer boards? They're coming. This is industry, folks. The Vincente and the boys right now are sorting them out of the container. We'll get it. Other thing that kind of went unnoticed, comings and goings, that flew under even my radar, which is pathetic. Jake called me and said, "Hey, do you have a description for the bait you came up with?" It's like, what? What? What are you talking about, man?
I needed it from somebody. I had to get it on the website. So, you're buzzsaw.
Forgot I came up with that one. No.
You got it? Okay.
Okay, so we, Don at Figure Eight and me, put our nuggets together. I said, listen, I need a cool buzz bait. Buzz bait. Because it just sounds like a redneck every time. Buzz, got him on the buzz bait. And I was like, I don't like any of the buzz baits. There's a time and a place for them. So we've got the Steve's Buzz Saw from Figure Eight. Don smacked them together. Talk about something that took forever. I kind of whiffed on it because we've been working on it for eons. Like trying to get it just right. So check that out. It's nasty loud. But one thing I wanted to mention on it, you've got the two blade setup. So you've got the dual buzz blades, and then there's a clevis, right? And it's got a willow on it.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's the trick for all you tinkerers. We didn't heat shrink over that clasp because if you want it to run even higher, put a Colorado on that bad boy. So it's got a willow on there for burning, but the bigger the blade you put on the back of this, the slower you can run it. So it comes in burn mode. Right out of the package, burn mode, turbo mode. It's like your TS9. But remember they did the Tube Screamer? Of course, we have the original Tube Screamer. And then the brilliant minds at Ibanez have to do a turbo. Remember that? So anyway, sorry, talking guitar pedals. I just ADD spaz. I thought I worked at JHS there for a second. My apologies. But, you know, you got freaking turbo mode. Everything in the 90s had to have turbo mode. Mm-hmm. But so the bus saw comes pre-configured in turbo mode with the little willow. But the trick-a-rooski here for me, if I want to slow it down, if it's like really thick slop, runner in turbo mode, the more open water you want to hit or the slower you want to go, put a bigger blade on it, grab one of those number 8 Colorados and you kind of got something funky. And the other thing is this, like a flap tail blade is kind of wicked on there. So it is in turbo mode for the burn, the rare.
So she's rigged to be modified.
Rigged to be modified.
That is cool.
And if you look at the way she runs, you can just tell from the pictures, the wire bend. So it's going to run head down. So it's just kind of careening off of the crap, right? So it's running head down. The blade angle and the arm bend is kind of funky there. So it's funny, we were talking bass fishing earlier. The best buzz baits are the loudest and nastiest and creaky and squeakiest. So yes, you get one of these things, you're going to notice these blades are not going to, like, you're not going to flick them with your finger and they're going to spin like the pinwheel out in your grandma's front yard. Woo, look at the wind. It's not going to do it. They're going to kind of be tight on there. You got to break them in, right? And the trick is not that the blade's broken in, that the stainless steel shaft gets wear too. So you've got to, like, just take your finger and spin those things. What the rednecks used to do, and this is, it's a bold move, Cotton, is literally take clamps and, like, clamp them. Remember the old truck windows, Jay, that have metal coming off, like the old F-150 rear views and stuff? You would see pro bass anglers driving down the road with buzz baits clipped to that on their truck to wear them out. What I like to do with mine is I actually literally clip them to my roof rack. That's how I broke, because I have my buzz saws. I don't have my, obviously, buzz baits in, but I have my prototype buzz saws. And what I did with them is just put them up there, clamp the body of the thing to the arm, and it just freaking just got its butt worn out. Right? Just let it just wear itself in however it wants to. Right? Maybe you could sit there and fan it, but get it worn in. That's where the magic happens. So it's going to be queaky and squeaky, and then play with the blades. And that's the trick with that thing. What I like about them, and what the whole point of this was having a natural transition, because with the willow leaf blade, so you even want to run like a big willow leaf on this sucker, you can get in the really, really nasty slop and then transition to a spinnerbait retrieve and drop her down. Okay. So it's kind of a half and half. It is a buzz bait. You cannot, Jay, how do you say buzz bait? You have to say it redneck bait, right?
Buzz.
It's buzz bait.
Buzz.
But nonetheless, the real sneaky, the real tricky, the real goody thing here is using it, you know, best of both worlds. Run it over that nasty slop, then take advantage of whether the tail gunner or the rear blade is. Let it drop in the water column if they haven't blown up on it, or if they're falling, take them down and then bring them back up, so you can kind of run this pseudo slightly under surface above. So it's not a top water, it's not a subsurface. You can kind of, it's like the little girl in the taco shell commercial, Jay. Why not both? So there you have it. Anyway,
I like it.
Yeah, it's just, it's not something you're going to throw every day. You could, you won't catch fish, but when you need it, you want it. Other than that, got the face gaiters. There's nothing else. Jay's got a cool, not yet. We're not going to, but I think there's some new cool baits kind of on the docket. One more kind of round of interesting things. The unexpected showing up.
Yeah, the unexpected. Yeah,
it's going to be soon. Cool. Get your hands on a little teaser, squeezer, pleaser. And not the face guards, but the picture of the face guards, I got to tell you, I'm looking at, it looks like you, Jay. The mannequin, is that mannequin made? It's like, did you lay face down in plaster of Paris with straws in your nose to make that mannequin head? Or
they used one of those 3D scanners on my face.
Uh-huh.
And they created the perfect human torso.
What?
Failed. They failed miserably.
Oh, man. I got a mannequin joke I'm holding on to.
Okay.
I got a mannequin.
Save it.
Just a man. Inside thoughts. I might crack my mouse here, Jay, because okay. I'm squeezing it so tight. Squeezing it so tight here. Hold on. Anyway, goodness gracious. Let's get to it. Got a couple questions here. I will say this. Something we're going to gab about here in a second. Let's do a little Q&A. I know we got a Steve stash. Oh, we'll get that. But there was a question about boat control, and we're going to rant about that here in a second. But get to some of these, Jay.
Okay.
Why not? Luke, you won Steve stash. There you go. Got your email here, and here's your question. I live in West Central Wisconsin. I'll be camping next to a lake that has weeds, rock humps, and a river that flows into it. The lake is the same area the lake temps around this time of year, 70 to 75 when he's going to be visiting. I have the Magnum, and he's got a Kraken ordered. Asking about kind of what baits would be better to use that time of year? Whether, you know, is it going to be Tube Style Bates? Is it going to be Magnus? He goes on to say, like, Titan. A lot of people thinking Blade. So, Central Wisconsin, 70s, 75. We're talking primo stuff, Rooney there. You know, so, speaking of topwater, that's not a bad time to have something, you know, have your top raider on hand, have your Big Mac on hand. That's what's interesting that time of year, Jay. I mean, peak season, 70, 75, Wisconsin. I think everything's in play.
Yeah, I agree. Peak water temps, you know, somewhere around late July, that usually kind of happens into early August. That's when everything is at its warmest for the year. Yep. And daylight's longest and all that, and anything could work.
And
it's time of day thing, you know. A lot of times the long drawn out days are pretty slow, but there's always a way to, you know, find fish off breaks and detect where that bait fish is and where it's at during, you know, from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m.,
oh, heck,
which are the off hours for the most part, right? Or,
right.
You know, maybe even earlier. And, you know, break out the deeper running baits like your Krakens and such.
Yeah, I mean, I would don't discredit your shallow stuff. I mean, you know, basic weather, let's just throw her out there. You know, if all things look good, I mean, you know, you can do anything that time of year, which is cool, but you need to have a smattering, which winning Steve's stash will happen, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that'll help you out a little bit. Luke sent an email here, and I'll give you a little smattering of things I would throw there in that time frame. Wisconsin is the home of the Grape Flame, so I'll have to throw one of those from Book Daddy in the box there for you. And, I mean, that time of year, I know we're always knocking blades. Don't get me wrong. It's not to not use them. It's don't use them all day, you know, but I'm thinking, you know, your spinner baits, like whether it be the meat grinder or, Booker slop, whatever, Rad Dog, have a little bit of everything that time of year. And I think a lot of guys that musky fish just their week, or they fish their trip or something of that nature, and then they try to do other things. I think that's a danger where you've got to look at the seasonality and what the water temps and conditions, which is a great question, but that's the one time of year, that peak season where, dude, you could catch one on a Bondi, right, at lunchtime, and then come around and catch one on a Big Mac at sunset. And you got one on a slammer fatty minnow a couple hours before.
For sure.
You know, so there's a lot of options there. It's not, you don't have to have like 7,000 wrecking racks or lake woods in the boat or anything at that point. But have a smattering. Have at least one tool for the job. Have a rubber bait. All this stuff. He mentioned Kraken. I mean, if you're not geared up with a bunch of rubber, you got your accessory tails. It's kind of like that versatile time of year. Jack's the one that asked about boat control masterclass. I don't know if we'll get a masterclass, but you're definitely going to get a rant here in a few. Jacob, thinking of trying out a Trinx 500, what are your thoughts on that reel? My thoughts on that reel are that it's huge. It is a big old reel. So I've got the Daiwa 500. What is it, Lexa J? Yep. Or the
Lexa 500.
Yeah, Lexa, correct. 500. It's the size of a 1936 typewriter from the Royal Typewriter Company. You reel it, and it's, you know, the typewriter goes, whatever. I'm thinking of a visual gag on a podcast. That's called autism.
Those are always difficult to translate,
yeah,
but
really
it can
is.
Be done.
It's my dude, my brain's like Looney Tunes today. But anywho, the 500 reels are monstrous. You know?
Yeah.
And I'm a smaller gentleman, so is Jay.
Well, they're technique specific. You know, pieces of equipment is
for
what they
gorillas.
Are. A lot of people like them for
gorilla
oversized
people.
Soft plastics.
Gorilla people like them.
Hard pulling baits. Yeah.
For what? Winching your boat in at the end of the day?
That's what a lot of people like them for.
Gorillas.
I like 400 size reels.
Gorillas?
They're almost half the weight.
Now, it's a big reel. You're not going to probably comfortably palm it. If you're ripping 2 pounders, cool. I have no problems pulling double tens with like a 5.58 Shimano or a 5.3. You know, all the like both the Herbex, myself, most of the we're not dragging double 13 trolling girls here, casting very often. Jay, what's the gear ratio on that Tranks? On the Tranks 500,
They got two of them. They got a high and a low. Okay. Not a low. They got a mid and a high.
Whatever.
Power gear and high gear. They call them.
If you were to hook into a blue marlin on an inland waterway, you would have enough line at least.
There you go.
So that
extra capacity.
That would be a benefit. I don't know. I'm teasing. I mean, it's a great reel. To each their own. A lot of guys like them. I don't like the ergonomics of it. Not knocking if that's what you throw. I've just not seen a reason for it. If I went high speed, when it comes to musky fishing, I don't need that kind of line capacity. And I don't find that a reel frame that large is conducive to good ergonomics. And good ergonomics means you have stamina on the water and you have better hook sets, right? Last time I fished one of those, I felt like when I set the hook, I was about to hit myself in the face with like a toaster,
Okay.
Put a toaster on the side of your reel. Okay. But as you can tell, big fan. Now it's a big reel. It depends on your applications. Let's be serious here. I'm talking to myself, not you. Applications for a reel that size, I would be thinking big, big, big water, big baits, monster medusas, pounders, double pounders. That's the only time I would see that's going to be a benefit. Jay, what do you think? I agree. I could get that done with another reel. Yeah. But
yeah, a lot of people use the foregrip. They don't palm the reel. So,
what's up with that? It's not that big of a deal. Here's the thing. We talk about reels. And I was telling Jay about some rod stuff before we started. And Jody Michael, Jones and around, we're looking at rods. Even at the bass rods, Jay, in the women's section at the fishing store where they keep the bass equipment, they've got it's a rare form, Jay, rare form today. Made myself laugh there. In the women's and children's bass fishing section, they even have added the pistol grip thing to them. Uh-huh. And I'm sitting there going, what is that? Why? Yeah. Why do you need that? I don't get it, because the ergonomics of fishing, there's that word again. The ergonomics of fishing a glide bait, of fishing traditional, are you going to pistol grip down a Suic or a Titan or a bobby bait? How do you hold it? Just jerk it straight down? I don't know. I want a foregrip because it's like, in musky rods, I want a foregrip, so I'm choking up on the rod, right? I'm able to get my glide baits looking right. I'm able to get my rubber baits looking right. I can do a lot more manipulation of the baits in the way that we're doing. It's like with this pistol grip stuff, you're reinventing the wheel. Like, how does one... I know, and here's the thing, Jake. I know they're like, this is meant for straight retrieving, like the marketing, right? A little bit. But how are we going to slack line twitch a shallow raider?
Okay. It's meant for, right. Exactly. It's meant for straight retrieving, like you said, or that's their mission statement, right, on this product.
Right.
But there is no straight retrieving in musky fishing. There shouldn't be.
Blades.
Yeah, but there's always manipulation of the speed.
Right. Something. So, rod angle.
Right.
Do something.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. They're not hiring me at any of the expensive rod think tanks, but that's just kind of where my brain's at on it. And I look at the gear of these big rods. We got extra long rods now. Great. Love the 9.6s. Love that 9.96. you got monstrous reels. And like I said, they've changing so many of these rods going to that grip deal. And the thing for me, I'm just talking out loud. So let's say we have multiple rod setups, right? We're in the Ranger. We've got 9 musky rods. You know, and we're going to go from, double eights to now we need to throw some rubber. So now we're going from like this pistol grip motif to transitioning and having really good mechanics with both. Maybe am I the idiot here? Can I not conceptualize different ergonomics and conceptualize different feel of the rod? But how does one go about palming a reel? How does one go about transitioning to a really clean 8 in that scenario where I can come up quickly and free spool my reel if I get a strike in the 8? Now I've got a pistol. You know, I've played with them. I've yet to figure it out. Maybe I need on the water instruction, and I'm open to it. But conceptually, I'm just seeing it like, what, you know? It's all good until you catch a fish. It's all good until whatever. I mean, that whole, whatever. Oh, man. Old man talks musky gear tonight at 10. Todd, Steve and Jay, do you guys have a lure color preference for muddy brown water, either rising river water, dark to brown stirred up lake? You know, where he's fishing, it's 0 to 1 foot visibility, not tannic. I'm sure this might vary in conditions, you know, based on sunny and cloudy. So as far as that, I mean, my go-to in stained muddy water is chartreuse. It's always going to play. Always done good on black. Pumpkin. That freaking pumpkin green. More bass. Tip of the hats to the bass. But like that pumpkin greenish color, you know, olive has done well, you know, like just green. And I don't know how it stands out, but that's always played well. He's got a bonus question, Jay.
Okay.
What are the top 2 or 3 collars? Oh, it says for Jay. What's the top 2 or 3 collars that you sell at the musky shop?
Okay. Tough question because they're strong paint patterns and different kinds of baits, you know, whether they're soft plastics that are generally just like two-tone dipped or they're actually painted. Of course, there's a lot of cool hard baits, but overall, day in, day out, perch and walleye patterns are number one in terms of actual paint jobs. Those are the top two. Yep.
Black and orange on your rubber.
Yep.
And something that always could pout. Eel pout. The poot, we call it.
Eel poot. Yes.
Poot. Goal. The poot always does good. Oh, I'd say, I mean, black, orange. And then your blades, black and nickel. You know, the jokes on the show and all the ideas practically write themselves from us looking at what everybody buys. Yep, it is black and nickel season again here at the Musky Shop.
Yeah, and blades. I mean, if you're not running black nickel and black orange patterned blades in your box, you don't have a staple.
If you want to match the hatch of other anglers. those are staples. Something else that I think about, Dive and Rice's natural perch, whether it be Titans, whether it be Suics, whether it be Bobbies, whether it be anything, natural perch, that seems to be the kicker there. Oh, what we got here? The poot. Patrick, this year I'm going to be using a fly rod as a throwback for followers. Could you provide specifics on building a fluorocarbon leader, test length, knot, and any other patent info? Love the podcast, meow. I keep it short and skanky on my fly leaders, Jay. That's what I
do. Yeah. Okay.
So if you got a good line, you know, obviously you have your loop end, say like a nice Rio or a SA or whatever, you know. What I will do, and this is heresy, but it works. I will just take 80-pound fluoro and I will crimp it onto the loop end. And on the other end, I will crimp a freaking split ring on. And I tend to go with about 24 inches. Now, everybody's rolling, you know, lefty craze, brain exploded. That's heresy. Well, muskies don't care about the rod tip. They don't care about the boat. They don't care about the hooks on conventional stuff. So stealth and this really nice tapered tippet and all this wonderful stuff is of no consequence for musky fly fishing, right? No consequence. What I like to do is I like to create my leaders primarily to target certain depth zones. I will generally run a floating line, and if I need more depth, I'll run a longer leader in accordance to that. But primarily, I'm fishing that top water column most of the time anyway. It's 24, 36 inches, and I put a split ring on that bad boy, a small one, and I'll switch flies, and it actually opens up the action on your Bufords and your bulkheads even more. And people are going, that is, right? Losing their minds. Don't care. Works. It's easy. It doesn't have to be complicated to be good. That's the best tip there I've got. Jay owned a fly rod one time, didn't you?
Yeah, actually I did, yeah.
What'd you catch?
I didn't use it much. I tried to, you know, learn the operation of the old 10-4 casting and all that. Lessons from a guy I used to work with, and
His name was Goat Dopeman.
You know, we had an old fly fishing expert back in the day.
And what was his name was Goat Dopeman.
His name was Paul.
Paul. All right, Jordan. Stephen J. Jamaican J. Now you're getting nicknames. Steve Bird and Jamaican J. When would a head spinning topwater be beneficial, greater than, say, a tail prop, a la Le Lure's Globe versus Toprator? Interesting. Never thought about that. Jay, you got globe baits, you got tail baits.
Not a lot of globe baits made anymore, unfortunately. Musky Madness makes a good one. Man, who else is still doing one? He was talking about Le Lure back in the day. Le Lure. Made some great stuff in the 80s and 90s.
The thing with Obnoxious B, what's the one from Chaos? Chaos has...
Yeah, they haven't had any made for a while. They make one with a front and back, so it's kind of like a globe front and a tail bait back. Obnoxious B. Yeah, I think you're right on that one.
I'm trying. My brain is trying. I would think Obnoxious... Is it? I'm looking while you explain here. Gotcha, Jay.
Might be Dirty B too. But anyway.
Yeah, Musky Madness Globe and the Globester. And yeah, what do you think the difference is?
The thing with globes, someone taught me a long, long time ago that globes are best run extremely slow, like a flap tail type speed. Mm-hmm. You want that thing to be barely turning and let it squeak. And that's another thing. The more you use it, the more it'll wear out the metal. There's usually little crimps and stuff involved with
You'll
the spacing
blind.
And stuff on it. A lot of people burn them in, you know, like, you know, buzzbait speed. You know what I mean? So that thing's really, really throwing water 2.5 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
And of course that could work, but they're at their best when they run extremely slow. And it's probably the same could be true with a lot of tail baits too. Your Lake X stuff, your Booker Top Raiders, your Whopper Ploppers from River to Sea, all those good, you know, pre-tuned, perfectly running baits right out of the box that can just be thrown out and reeled in at any speed. I've fished topwaters with you, and you don't break out the topwaters until the very, very specific conditions warrant. Let's put it that way.
Well,
but when you do,
slow.
you fish them slow, baby.
Yep. There's a thing I just put on the app today, believe it or not.
Okay.
I was talking to Herbie, did a little piece.
Big Herbie or little Herbie?
Danny's Danny.
Oh, okay.
Herbie's Herbie. That's big.
Danny's not even son of Herbeck anymore. The
poor
yes. guy.
Oh, my apologies. He is Danny, son of Herbeck.
we love him. We love him. But please
but
continue.
No, so I'm talking Herbie. But anyway, we were picking his brain a little bit. Did a kind of like a different interview format thing. He wanted to talk about the Big Mac from Livingston, and you know, we all had our swing at that thing. Here's a bunch of smattering of ideas in it. And, you know, he kind of ended the little interview clip there, written thing, you know, talking about just slowing down. That's the big thing. And when I think globe baits, I actually think I've yet to see many people that really fish globe baits that didn't have some kind of trailer on them, be it like a soft plastic tail or something for a more visual. Where you never really worried about, hey, I'm going to smack, you know, I mean, I don't think a grub tail is going to do you much on your top raider, right? But on a globe, I've seen people have downturn like Kalen's grubs and Action Plastics on them. Tyrant Tackle makes a globe style bait we have at the shop that has a soft plastic trailer on it already, like built in. But the old cats I saw that were fishing globes, it was low and slow and just pause, you know, nothing quick at all. So other than that, I mean, maybe it's a better visual target, I guess, you know, because you're hoping they're just going to come a body shot, and then having that little trailer on there might get you somewhere. So anyway, break out the globes, Jay. Break out the globes. It's funny. I mean, those were so dominant for so long that was.
That's true.
That was what you threw. People threw the globes.
Yep, the Flugers and all that. Yep, back in the day.
Get your Fluga. Come get yourself a Fluga. Oh, what do we got here? Goodness gracious. Look in here. One more. Why not?
How do you determine who wins the stash today? How does that go?
Did it. It was the first guy.
You just said you won.
Yeah. The guy was... I did the same thing. I was just in the spirit of thrift. Luke, the first question. Email me. I'll send you the crap. I did the same thing. I just moved the... Basically, when I opened my email, I kind of flipped the mouse and landed on one. That's why I've got them out of order right now.
Gotcha.
That's why I'm being annoying. So I'm trying to figure out which one I'm trying to get here to, because now I've got it all, and now it's all a hot mess. You know? Anyway,
moving on.
I can't find it. Whatever.
Okay.
Get yourself a globe. Anyway, to complain and rant about boat control. So, well-timed, that question. It has been a windy mess where I'm at. Windy mess
here too. Yeah,
just blowing hot, cold, you name it. It's like, you know, it's been standing in between like a heater and an air conditioning unit all at the same time. Everything you can ask for. But the way to put fish in the boat has been quality boat control. That's it. There's been multiple days where I've had to make changes even where we're fishing because this is just not tenable. Right now, what determines A, when you should make a change, if you can make a change, or B, when you should hyper focus on boat control, which I think is the operative thing here, right? Because good boat control catches more muskies. But when is boat control the most important thing to focus on? And the answer is relatively simple, which is when it's negatively influencing the running of your baits, how your baits are running, right? So if we have something I dealt with, I was on a river and I have wind coming upstream and current going down, right? Teacup in a tornado scenario. At times you can't advance forward. At times you're just, you know, you're going backwards, you're going forward. You can't if you lean on the trolling motor too fast to overcome it, now you're dragging the baits in front of you or ahead of you. So what I'm looking at a boat control, the answer for good boat control is that it allows appropriate casting distance, right? So you need the right amount of casting distance so that your lures hit their target depth, first and foremost, then that your advancement does not influence that at all. That's it. Now, how we accomplish that is where the rubber meets the proverbial road, right? So, example, let's say that we are very confident that we need to be throwing baby depth raiders at target edges that we've determined muskies are using in the 6 to 8 foot range, right? If we know that, we now know that we cannot allow our boat control to negatively influence that, because if we're not hitting that running depth and we're not hitting that target zone appropriately, we're ineffective. So you need to understand what is happening pattern-wise for that scenario, but you also need to understand how to pattern in tough boat control situations, right? So if we understand we have a goal and that our baits are supposed to have specific running depths at certain target zones, we tailor our presentation so that we have the distance and advancement that does not impede that bait's action. That does not mean we go to every spot and spot lock, right? Because if the wind's taking things down and away from us, that's changing the action. If it's going the other way and taking, you see what I'm saying? If there's a wind or a current shift, that plays. If the boat's moving forward too fast, it's actually drawing the baits up. You're not hitting your running depth, right? So yeah. Your boat control should not impede the proper running speed and depth of your baits. Now, let's say you go out and we've got no clue what they're doing, and we've got boat control issues based on conditions. You need to allow for proper running depth while patterning. So let's say it's a summer day, right? And we've got howling winds, big chop, but we at least understand the general seasonality of things enough to go. It's summer. Let's hit these weed edges, outside weed edges in the middle of the day, because they're associated with a pretty good break line and things should be there because we've checked our bait and we've got some good ideas, right? So we've got a target zone and we've selected baits in that target zone, which would be big rubber baits. We got our Kraken, we got a Bulldog, we got our Kraken, we got a depth raider and whatever. That kind of fits the general bill for those deep outside edges, right?
Mm-hmm.
We need to ensure that our boat control is appropriate for each of those baits, right? So a depth raider is going to be, with it being a crankbait, be a little bit more forgiving. As long as that bait's not getting too far behind us, too far ahead of us, it should hold its depth, right? So when I make my cast out from the boat, let's say I'm throwing directly out from the side of the boat, if the bait comes in at the deviation of the rod length, should be pretty good, right? So if I'm naturally getting my figure eight, that bait should hit its apex. But let's say I'm ripping a Bulldog and The wind is pushing at my transom and it's going forward. Well, if I'm advancing too much, the bait's never hitting depth because it's not aided by a lip. Do you get what I'm saying conceptually here, Jay, that...
Yep.
Like, you've got to control the boat for the bait you're using. And that's
drift speed.
Drift speed. Lack of advancement.
Mm-hmm.
More so than anything. Because when you've made your cast, and let's say we're standing on a dock, it's dead flat, there's we're in a controlled environment, as controlled as fishing can be. We're at a dock, it's dead flat, calm, you're in a stationary position, you got your rod. You make your X length cast, you have repeatability. If you made the same cast 100 times, the deviation in running depth without a big change in your rod angle would be pretty similar, right? Now, the running depth of a bait varying with an advancement speed of 0 to 5 miles an hour based on current or crazy scenarios is vast. So we never want to be dragging the baits behind us, right? That's rule number one. So if you're advancing so much that your baits are getting... Oh, perfect example to make it as simple as possible. You got two anglers in the boat, right?
Uh-huh.
One's in the front, one's in the back. If that, if the lead angler's bait is getting anywhere close to the guy in the back, you got problems, right? At some point in that cast, that bait is not running true. It's running on its side, or it's come up in the water column quite a bit because of the angle. So your momentum forward cannot draw the baits up. It can't influence their running depth shallower, right? Now, the adverse of that is if, say, we're casting in front of the boat, we're casting downstream in current. If your bait is, if your boat is catching up to a bait, it's not running properly. Because as you get closer to a bait, it's slowing your reeling speed down, right? So if we cast, let's say we cast a bucktail, everybody loves blades, and we make a cast from the nose of the boat at an acute angle. Everybody loves to throw in front of the boat because there's no fish beside the boat, Jay. They're all in front of the boat, right? You know, it's
grass is always greener straight ahead.
Right, right. Yes. So there's no way we're in the right place now. Let's throw ahead. Yeah, and right. So if you do that, let's correct that mistake. But let's just say, for example, that you want to make a cast in front of ahead of the boat, but you have your boat on constant, or you have your foot on the pedal. You are actually shortening the distance between you and the bait. So you're influencing the bait's running speed. Treat your boat, right? Treat your boat as if you're trying to have no influence. That's good boat control. The boat should not influence your presentation until you're trolling. So, and then that's all it does.
Yeah, there you go. All right.
But forward momentum, falling back, falling, pushing too far forward, you know, whatever it is, you have to consider that it's either pulling your baits out of their running zone, or you're putting too much slack in the line. There's innumerable ways that you can screw it up. But the right way to do it, and the simple answer to boat control, is do it in a manner that does not negatively influence your presentations. And by negative, I mean it has minimal impact. Your job is to make sure that your boat's movement impacts your lure as little as possible.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Now, the positioning thereof becomes of utmost importance, because we need distance to create depth quite often, right? So we need, especially with crankbaits and with sinking baits, we need a predetermined length to achieve depth, right? So when a deep running crankbait that's non-sinking, which most of them are, there's very few sinking crankbaits unless you crack them, most of these crankbaits need time to hit any measurable depth, so it can't be too short of a cast, right? If it's too long of a cast and you have difficult boat control issues, now you're hastening the inevitable, which you have a falling fish and now you're running depth, your action screwed up, right? So it's finding the controllable distance between your target zone, running depth that you need to achieve, and what positioning gets you there the most efficient and effective manner. That's it. And when you look at it that way, you go, when I kind of just shake my head, where I'll talk to an angler and they go, well, we've got trails marked out on our lake on our trolling motor, which is not bad. I'm not knocking if you do this, but here's why I don't do it, and what I think why it can be detrimental to your success. So as you plot a GPS trail for your trolling motor, right, and you're holding a contour or brake line, it's not compensating, right? It is running it's running the same pass the way we always done it. This is how we run this pass, and we've made no adjustments for conditions. Well, the fish have, so we probably ought to do something, right? So I think that can be detrimental, because, yes, you might, let's say you run 10 trips, 10 different days, and you run the pass in an identical fashion at the same speed that your trolling motor advances along said pass, and you have one or two contacts, it's not because the fish weren't in your proximity. It's because your boat control was not set up for success, because your boat control, now you've handed off one of the most important elements to automation, right? My trolling, I've got the baddest, the newest trolling motor there is, and there's no setting on there that says, hey, let's account for today's fishing conditions, right? It's brainless. It's just a motor that's following GPS waypoints. It's not going, you know, you can't expect a non-organic thing to understand the impact of the organic world.
There's no AI button yet on them.
Right. And even at that point, it would be stealing from people that figure. That's the fun thing about AI, guys. It's not artificial intelligence. It's the regurgitation of others' information. It's created nothing. Intelligence creates things, right? Intelligence creates things. AI is a learning algorithm, but that's a whole other podcast. So it is reimagining the work of others. Nonetheless, you're not going to be able to trust your trolling motor that it is going to accommodate the conditions. That's your job. And
yeah, wind direction, speed, current, right. All those things. Yeah.
And my thing is this, and we don't talk bass a lot. We always poke fun at it, but whatever. But you had mentioned like the Bassmaster Classic, and then I'm thinking about, in my head, I've been spinning about here a little bit, like bass fishing versus muskie fishing. Well, bass fishing is where the money's at. I can promise you that, right? I don't see any of those guys really running predetermined, like the best of the best, they're not running predetermined passes, and they're not running remote control motors. And that's one reason I get people ask me all the time, why do you run a foot pedal? Like, I run a cable steer, it's an Altrex, I'm running the new Altrex, and it's got the cable steer feeling pedal. It's not real cable steer, but it feels like that. And I always have my foot on the motor, because I'm always making small adjustments nonstop, right? So it's not set the pass and cast and hope for the best. It's moving in and out of structure. Structure is there. It's compensating for wind drift. I spend more time running my trolling motor in reverse, like with the you know, I'll have the pedal completely backwards, where the prop is pushing me, slowing my advance more so wind drift. So I think a lot of guys are like, the answer that a lot of people look for when it comes to boat control is like, what do I do in this? What do I do in that? What I, you know, if it's blowing east, and what do you do? It's not, there's not an answer for the wind's blowing 40 out of the east or 40 out of the west or whatever. It's how are you logically going to create a scenario where your boat is influencing your casting in the least impactful manner? That's it. That's boat control. And there's tips and tricks. I'll riff more on that. But the concept is more important than any tip or trick, because it does not take a rocket surgeon to go, I'm moving too fast. What must I do? My baits are getting behind the boat, right? As they get behind the boat, they're influenced negatively from this drift. I need to either come at it nose in, right? So if the wind's pushing too hard to the rear of my boat on the transom, well, maybe if I flip sides and fight into the wind, it's going to have far less impact. Simple. When I say, like, not using the remote, and I use my remote for adjustments, don't get me wrong, but majority of my time is foot pedal. That's because the topography is not this beautiful straight line. The bathymetry of a lake, a river, or whatever, it's not an Olympic swimming pool, right? Square edges. It's not. It's organic. It's fractal. It's all these things that are taking place where I'm not going to make a straight line down an edge because I went GPS point to GPS point. I've got to move and flow with the lake itself, You know, moving in 5 more feet, heck, five's over. Moving in 2 more feet is the difference between catching a fish or not. Moving out 2 feet is the difference in catching a fish quite often. You know, the question that comes up, why am I getting nothing but follows? Bad boat control is often at play. You're giving them not enough time to commit. And that's the thing. If you're too tight to something, okay, we're pulling them off of rock bars on Lake of the Woods. I've seen people up on Lake of the Woods taking shots that are just short, way too short. We're getting nothing but back it off. You don't have to see the top of the rock. It will be there, but get an appropriate distance. And the same thing can be said for being way too far off of stuff, right? They're breaking off. I can see them break off, or electronics say they're breaking off. Tighten up, right? You're giving them too much time to look at it. And there is a delicate balance between not enough time and too much time. And where that balance meets is catching them, right? You want them to have enough time to overcome the bait, but you don't want to have them, you know.
I agree. Yeah.
Exactly. Why do we make turns when trolling? If you just troll in a straight line, you go, well, he's going, okay, well, you've got my attention now, what, big boy? Right? You wonder why baits like a supernatural headlock or matlock are so effective, because they have wander where they're mixing it up. And we're always talking about mixing things up on retrieves. Don't just throw it out, turn the handle, expect glory. Well, the trick is finding the right spot to get them to commit before we even get to bait, right? And at times, it's not every day. I wish I was, nobody's just dialed in every day, but I wish I was, where I knew the perfect distance to get them before, to always get them to hit before they, right? Now, days where they're really moving, I'm getting a lot of contacts, I'll change it up. And the difference is noticeable, right? Boat control, 5 more feet off of an edge, or five more feet off of breaks is enough to prevent fish from coming in the eight. Because you'll have guys ask all the time, I can't convert them in the eight. They're spooking off in the eight, right? If it's consistent lack of figure eight fish, the answer is not, sometimes it's a bad figure eight. Okay? But a lot of times is, you could pull off of that and add 4 more feet and you'll get him. Right? And it's a lot of that is how fast are the fish moving? What's the seasonality? Right? What's the seasonality? You know, dead of winter, I don't want to waste their time too much. Believe it or not. I'll target deep stuff where I go, oh man, they're moving slow, they're moving lazy. I want to get them into the figure eight so I can give them something changey-uppy real quick, right? When they're actually acting like we want them to act sometimes on these peak summer days that are rocket shipping a little bit, I need a little tarmac, right? Give me a little more distance so I can pull them off a cover of structure, get them into open water, put a move on them, and now they're eating the thing, right? Because speed needs distance quite often, right? You don't want to be up on a shallow edge burning. We're talking about Steve's buzzsaw or burning topwaters, and you're like, you know, throw it out, reel it in. Oh, there it is. We're at back in the eight. You don't want 4 second casts, which is an extreme example, but we also don't want, you know, you don't want people freaking sitting there eating an entire taco every time you make a cast. You're sitting there watching the watch going, well, that bait will be back. There's a happy place. There's a fish catching place between way too close and way too far off, which is boat control, right? Now, the other component of this is, when you're at distance, casting distance, and at some point this summer I'm going to make Jay do it with me. We're going to put him on the shoreline, get some like freaking football drill cones, Jay, right? And show you how far spread apart, the distance in your cast, how far they're spread apart when you've made them. So what you think is saturation cast could be landing 15 feet apart, splash to splash, right? So not only do we need the right distance, but we need the appropriate distance for accuracy. That's why we're always, or at least I, a lot of guys are on the remote control. A lot of guys are just kind of going through the motions or following a trail. That's why I'm always compensating with a foot pedal. Always, foot's always on that thing. Every like, I can't really remember too many casts where I make a cast and I stand there and I'm casting the entire time and then I adjust the boat. I'm always trying to compensate and find that right distance off cover and structure, or I've predetermined what that distance off cover and structure should be and trying to hold it. Because when it boils down to one, most days you can have three guys in the boat and one cast matters all day long. One, right? That's musky fishing.
I hear you, man. I do that all the time when I'm fishing by myself on the river in my little boat.
Yep.
You know, I got a transom trolling motor. Sometimes I'll make adjustments twice during one cast retrieve.
Right, because it matters. It boils down to one cast.
Just real quick ones. I mean, I'm not trying to disrupt my retrieve, but I bump it. Yep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And now the knee jerk for a lot of people, well, spot lock. That can play, right? But in windy conditions, you're spot locking your boat swinging around, right? You need, sometimes you would need 30-foot long power poles and spot lock, right? You're not going to just hit a mid-depth hump, you know, and hold perfect and the boat's not moving around and doing things. So, you know, maybe I'm old school. Maybe I'm missing the proverbial boat on some of it, but it's worked thus far and it worked for all the Bookers and the Herbies of the world, which is constant adjustment. And it's harder and nothing that's worth having's easy, right? Unless you're like a boat control savant and those don't exist. But you come out, you know, you're Amadeus of boat control and you're just born with it. But, dude, what a horrible, can you imagine how sucky that would be? Like, listen, guys, yeah, we're at a school.
I can't stop thinking about boat control. That's all I think about.
You're at a school for savant. It's like the X-Men. It's like, what's your superpower? Perfect boat control. No.
Could be a good video.
Yeah, oh, my God. Oh, can I put you in a bald cap at the Muskie Shop, School for the Gifted? We'll get, like, you don't even have a wheelchair. You just have an old shopping cart. All I can see is...
The Muskie Shop, School for the Gifted.
Elmerine? Is that too far of a stretch for...
Elmer's the head instructor.
No. You are the Professor Xavier in your shopping cart with a bad bald cap on.
Okay.
Of the Muskie Shop, School for the Gifted. One of our employees can talk to suckers.
And understand them.
But goodness gracious, man, I'm dumb today.
Good stuff.
This is what happens, Jay. You let me get a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
Eat nothing. It's the middle of the day. You'd think I was crazy, and I'm just... rambling, but it's gonna take work, and I think the most important factor of that is to know what to consider. That's why I'm putting it it's the only way I know how to do it, which is look at what actually it does. I mean, you don't, if someone to go out there and go watch, you could not go out and catch a muskie with no rods or lures solely through good boat control, right? Oh, wow, great boat control. Let me jump in your boat. No, it's a component that you have to manage, right? So it's not only are we casting and retrieving, we're managing that factor that has as much negative, or it doesn't even have as much positive influence as is. It's a, you're mitigating negativity. That's it. Like, your rod's positive, your reel can be positive, but your boat control, you're doing it in such a way that it's not hurting things. That's it. That's just the concept. There you have it, folks. So God, sorry. Not that I have any thought, Jay. I have very minimal feelings and thoughts about it, right? You know, just not.
No, tell them about boat speed, drift speed too. Optimal drift speed in most conditions too, because I fish with you a lot and I know what you run.
Oh, as far as my advance, oh God, I mean if I'm doing a mile an hour, I'm shocked.
Way too fast for sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean it's that. That's a whole other. Okay, that's if you want me to go there, I'll go there. That's just another way I'll look at things or conceptually look at it. So, okay. Let me come up with the cleanest way to articulate this. I've made my decision of where I'm about to target, right? Based on the fact that I'm confident that there are fish there. So I'm going to approach that area as if I need to cover the entirety of it. When you hear me talk about saturation casting, mm-hmm. when I've pulled into a location, I have doubled down. Now you say, talking about fishing me, how often, Jay, have you seen me make 3 to 4 passes on the same 30 yards of something or smaller areas, and then we catch a fish?
Yes.
Multiple every time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just an overarching concept of you don't need to scour the lake to find a muskie. Now, that is what 99% of people are doing. Okay? In the scenario, and this is not a hypothetical, this has been a reality for me numerous times. Numerous times. Hey, Steve, go out and do a magic trick. Camera's running. Let's go. Where are we going? Never been here before. Now the monkey must dance and put something in the net. And just to tell you, we're starting at 2. Could you make it? And nobody's doing it in a mean way. It's not mean spirit. It's just the reality of the matter. And in the back of my head, I'm going, oh, crap. Got to figure this one out. Which, what I'm doing is I'm looking at seasonality. I'm looking at bait fish. I'm looking at a lot of different factors. I'm looking at my map work. So, you know, everything starts with mapping, map study, then considering seasonality, and then looking at the current on-the-water conditions, and then using your boat control in such a manner that it doesn't negatively influence your presentations. Right? But what I'm getting at is, even put in a scenario where I have to just kind of make musky magic with nothing or no real advanced knowledge of the lake, or, you know, I might get the same thing somebody got a new body of water gets, which is, hey, you have any luck out there? Right? I turn into the guy at the ramp, right? Hey, what are they biting? trying to get your last little recon in there. In doing so, I still double down on really small areas, right? You can put me on a big old body of water. I'm just going to pick 3 or 4 max. Well, they check, you know, I've got a shallow zone. I've got a mid zone. I've got a deep zone. Hopefully it works. But in doing so, I'm making sure I'm getting the saturation casting. And I'm really covering areas, which most people don't do. And that comes from boat control that's tailored to the scenario. That's it. Trust me, I've failed at this numerous times. Don't get me wrong. I'm not like going out there. I did not graduate from the muskie shop school for the gifted or anything. So I'm not like, whoa, mm-hmm. you know.
Very few have. Yeah.
Very few. Very most drop out.
Washout rate. Yeah. Don't ring the bell.
My I was gifted with the ability to run a fish finder without reading the manual, Jay. It was very weak. It was not barely got me on the entrance exam. didn't even make the cut. He was just, you know, but nonetheless, in doing so, like I said, the thought process is not go out there and figure it out right then and there. Like, don't launch the boat and go, ugh. Now I'm looking at it and I'm going, okay, well, that edge is, you know, that's a pretty decent long stretch of what should be weeds. Okay.
There's obviously the shallows. And this comes from color coding map. Okay, okay. There's a break at 5. There's a break at 8. And there's a break at 12. Right? I'm going to match my boat positioning to conditions and drift and speed. And then that allows me to structure fish. You can't target structure without good boat control, right? You're not going to cover it. So it's all hand and glove, right? And that's where it goes. But it all comes down to all the best planning and all the best presentations, and the lacking component often is boat control, right? So you go through that scenario. I'm just kind of rambling a bit, but that's it. You could go out there and pick 3 great spots and have great conditions and be too close, too far off, or just cruddy boat control that it's negatively influencing the baits. And it, like I said, conceptualize it from that standpoint. If no negative impact is the best boat control. That is exactly what we're looking for.
Yep.
Jay, what was your super? I don't even want to know.
What was my superpower?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Let me think up something quick here. It's
obviously not real if you have to make it up.
Superpower. Musky Shop School for the Gifted. Professor Jay. Let me think here. Professor Jay,
just you and
his definitely not electronics.
Definitely not.
No, that's not something I'm a savant at. No.
No.
You tell me. I don't know.
Checking folks out with a smile.
That's there you
Jay's
go.
Superpower, guys. Come on into the Musky Shop if you want to see Professor Jay's signature smile and say.
And stop on in if you want to fling some baits in the parking lot with Jaybird with the new Genesis reel. It is fun.
Come for the baits.
Especially when it's snow covered. It's awesome. Yeah, they land softly.
They land, killing them softly. Anyway, Professor Jaybird, say goodnight. Mentally, don't even say anything. People will be able to feel it. Are you holding? I can feel it. There.
They got it.
Bass, I hear you calling, but I can't fish for you right now. Me and the boys are trolling, and they'd never let me live it down. Just a few more muskies, and I'll throw a frog for you. I hear my buddies laughing, oh Bass, what can I do? Bass, what can I do?